This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. 4,000 progressive activists gathered last weekend in Chicago, Illinois, for the People's Summit, an impressive annual conference organized by the National Nurses United. In only its second year, the conference has grown dramatically, underscoring the resurgence from the left, in large part as a response to last year's candidacy of Senator Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump's win in November. At this year's People's Summit, progressive political analyst R.J. Esca was present, and I had the chance to sit down with him to discuss the current political moment that we're in. Richard, or R.J. Esca, is host of The Zero Hour, a weekly radio program, and a senior fellow with the Campaign for America's Future. He's also a former consultant and public policy advisor. His writings have appeared in a number of print and digital publications. And here's the conversation we had last weekend.
I am here with Richard Esca, or R.J. Esca, senior fellow with the Campaign for America's Future and host of The Zero Hour. And we're at the People's Summit in Chicago on day two of the summit, Saturday, June 9th. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you. It's so good to be here.
So what brings you to the People's Summit? Why does this seem to be an apt place for you with the politics you do and the writing you do to be present at?
Well, I think I first connected with it last year because I was a head writer on the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign, and this is really kind of taking the momentum from Bernie's campaign, the movement momentum as opposed to the leadership momentum, the grassroots momentum, and trying to keep that going and build on that. So that's why I was invited last year and this year, and the reason why I've come, accepted the invitation, is because, number one, I find it inspiring and uplifting to see so many people who are willing to work so hard for change, and it gives me faith and inspiration, and number two, I learn a lot, and I see a lot of great people, including yourself, so...
So let's talk about the challenges that lie for us in Trump's America. It seems like the job of progressives is really, broadly speaking, twofold: building power, but resisting Trump. Building something positive while holding the line of defense against the very rapid-fire assaults on the country, the Constitution, etc. And one of the things that Trump unveiled last week, as all eyes were on the Comey hearing, was his infrastructure week. He named it his infrastructure week. We heard about the announcement that air traffic control would be privatized under Trump. And this is an issue that has been brought up in the past, but Trump seemed to really embrace it. He is, I think, claiming to his supporters that he has this giant $100 billion plan to revive, rebuild the country's infrastructure. On the surface of it, some of it sounds all right. What's under the surface?
Well, first of all, when it comes to resisting Trump and building power, I actually think it's the same struggle. I actually think that just saying I think Donald Trump is a horrible human being will not put anybody back into power. I think you have to have an agenda. As far as the privatization is concerned, he's actually been saying I have $1 trillion infrastructure plan, but then it turns out that his real plan is, well, he says he will spend $200 billion on infrastructure, and other people, including especially corporations, will spend the rest. But then what he doesn't mention is that he's already planning to cut $206 billion. So
cut from what?
Infrastructure spending that's already scheduled. So when Trump says, guess what, I'm going to spend $200 billion on infrastructure, what he doesn't tell you is that net-net, with the cuts he's already asked for, he would cut spending for infrastructure. He actually is not spending anything. But what he's planning to do when he says he's going to raise money from the private sector is sell off all the things that the American people own to private corporations. That's what this is really about, is taking our commonly held government resources and giving them to corporations and billionaires.
And this is so important to discuss because this is the sleight of hand that politicians from both parties tend to conduct when they want to talk about you know, the things that are important to Americans. They don't ever put it in terms of we're giving away public resources to private corporations. They talk about it in terms of we're going to raise money from the private sector, which conjures this false image of the private sector somehow being benevolent and giving money to Americans. But they're giving money in exchange for something big that they're getting, right? Hasn't privatization of American infrastructure, hasn't that been a project that's already in progress, though?
Oh, it's very much in progress, which gets me to another point about Trump, which is however uniquely horrible he is, most of his policies are extensions of what Republicans have already been doing. We need to remember that, yes, we've given away, but unfortunately, there are a number of Democrats who are in love with this idea as well, and I'm planning to write about them too. But for example, in Indiana, they gave away the highway system. They sold it to corporate interests, Wall Street interests, really, investors. They bragged about how much money they'd made, and within years, there were problems of very long lines at the toll booths, tolls going up, urine smells in the bathrooms and the rest stops, because if you give it to a corporation, you'll pay in a different way. You'll pay more than you would have in taxes. You'll get terrible service. The analogy I use is if your refrigerator is broken in your kitchen, you don't sell your kitchen to Olive Garden and then expect to pay for every meal you eat there for the rest of your life. That would be a bad deal. We would know it's a bad deal. You couldn't even decide what you want to eat. If it's not on the Olive Garden menu, you can't have it. So if you wouldn't sell your privatize your kitchen to Olive Garden, why would you privatize your highways, your waterways, your power plants, your power lines, everything else we need to survive as a people and sometimes keep us alive, as with air traffic controllers? Why would you privatize those?
So it's one thing to have one's iPhones produced by a private company. It's another thing to have one's roads and bridges run and water infrastructure run by a private company, because, of course, built into the business model is the fact that it is a business model and there has to be profit, or they wouldn't do it in the first place, right? And we need to understand that.
No, of course. I mean, if you assume that every corporation wants to make 15 or 20% profit, if it costs $100 for the government to do it, or for, let's say, just to do it, then the corporation is going to add $15 or $20 to that. But there's this myth that, no, they'll save so much money, they'll cut the costs so much that they can take their percentage and you'll still be better off. But experience has shown us that is not true, and that we get terrible service and pay too much for it.
Because we certainly, these are the public commons to begin with. The existing infrastructure is the result of public money from the time these infrastructure projects were built. Also, of course, we don't acknowledge the fact that corporations use public infrastructure for their products, for their profits. You know, they use the roads to transport their goods. We're already, in many ways, subsidizing corporate profits, even when we haven't actually given them control wholesale of our public infrastructure, right?
Sure. All the Silicon Valley billionaires who make money off the internet was developed by the American people. The iPhone, which you mentioned earlier, there's a book called The Entrepreneurial State that points out, by an Italian economist, points out that most of the key parts of the iPhone itself were developed by the United States government, used without paying any kind of license or fee back to the United States government, and Apple incorporated in Ireland so that it didn't even have to pay its fair share of corporate taxes.
So why does Trump, or how can Trump get away with doing this? His voters, his supporters are the people who did so because they were struggling. And I'm not sure if many of them realized when they were voting for him that their water infrastructure would be given over to a private company. Is there some sort of sleight of hand that we can expose when we talk to other people about this? Because talking across the aisle is a big part of our movements, or should be at least.
Oh, I completely agree that it is. And may I just parenthetically say Bernie would have won. Because he has the gift of speaking across the aisle to people, telling them, look, you're getting ripped off. Trump actually took Bernie's campaign rhetoric and adopted it. Rigged game, you're getting ripped off, it's the billionaires. Goldman Sachs, the whole thing. No, if we tell that story consistently, and it's got to be just not at the presidential level, you know, liberals fixate on the presidential race, but it's got to be every race up and down the ballot. Democrats have been losing from state legislatures on up. They've got to fight someone has got to fight every race with a real explanation of this ripoff, including Trump's ripoff, that he's a front man for the people who've been ripping you off for your whole life.
So, Richard, let's talk about the current political situation. We have a president who just in a few short months has, given one justification after another for impeachment. I mean, if there was an oppositional party in Congress, impeachment proceedings would have started and been in progress ages ago if Obama had done even, you know, a tenth of what Trump did in his 4 months, even once during his 8 years, we would have seen just so much venom from the Republican Party. Many of them, or most of them, are choosing to stick with Trump. But won't it hurt the party in the long run? Republican Party in the long run, at some point, don't the majority of Republicans need to realize that it's their party or Trump, and they've got to choose?
Well, here's what's going on with the Republicans right now. Trump's base is so fanatical and so devoted, and these Republicans know that even if they're Tea Party Republicans, they will be primaried by somebody even more extremist if they go up against Trump right now. What has to happen first is that, in my opinion, is that Trump's base has to turn against him. The Republicans will not be profiles in courage on this. So
Trump said during his campaign he could shoot somebody in the middle of the street and he would still continue to win support, and I think he was right.
Oh, I do think he was. Well, that shows you how angry people are, and that also shows you, I mean, yes, there is racism out there, and we have to acknowledge it, but we also have to acknowledge, and there's a lot of good polling data on this and everything else, that a lot of people in this country of all races feel they've been shafted, they've been ripped off, they're right. And the Democratic Party hasn't been speaking to that. So that rage, that disarticulated rage, has gone somewhere else.
And racism is a wedge. It's a weapon.
Right. And racism, is, like it or not, racism is one of those things that pops up in the human spirit when people are angry and despairing. Right. And I don't defend it. I mean, please don't get me wrong. But I do think that we have to understand that there's been a failure to address the despair and rage that people are feeling, which for white people may get channeled into racism. For other people, including the Democratic base, may get into, look, Republican vote suppression has made it hard for people of color to vote in a lot of states around this country, and they're not going to go out and miss a day's worth of work and all that that entails to vote for somebody who isn't passionately fighting for their interests, and I don't blame them.
So can the Republican Party at this moment be pushed enough from the left? Because clearly they're being pushed from the right, as you just mentioned. They're worried that if they were to challenge Trump, there might be somebody more extreme and right-wing running up against them. But what about challenging them from the left? Have elements within the Democratic Party and from outside the Democratic Party been able to effectively scare Republicans from the left?
Well, in a sense, they've already been challenged from the left, and that's why Donald Trump is president. Donald Trump was the only candidate on the Republican side who said he would not cut Social Security, who said that he would not cut Medicare, that he would bring our jobs back, that he would rebuild our infrastructure, that he would renegotiate these lousy trade deals, which Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama had been working for many years. So in a sense, he was lying from start to finish. But if we had a Democratic Party that up and down the line was giving this left message, Republicans would either have to respond or they would lose.
So on the local level now, do you see enough grassroots enthusiasm among those people who threw their weight behind Bernie Sanders to take on something, to take on constructive projects? Because while there's a lot of rage on the right within Trump's base, there was also plenty of rage on the left. who threw their weight behind Bernie Sanders. I remember being at the Democratic National Convention in Philly last year, and the anger that the Bernie-crats, if you want to call it, were feeling at seeing the Democratic Party completely undermine them was very palpable. And the story that came out of the DNC from the mainstream media was very different from what was happening on the ground. On the ground, you saw that anger everywhere. Almost everyone I talked to was a strong supporter of Bernie Sanders and were angry at what was being done. Where are those people today? What are they doing?
Well, I think a lot of them are very mobilized and very determined to act. You know, in California, we saw it with the near takeover of the Democratic Party. We now have a very different Democratic Party. And the Democratic Party is not the only field for action by any means, but we now have a very different Democratic Party in several places around this. In Nebraska, in California, the tenor of the party has changed. In New York, the Working Families Party is stronger. On and on and on. These people are going to be active, and some of them are going to be active in movement work that involves causes. Some of them are going to be active in electoral politics. Electoral politics is not the only avenue, but, you know, I work with People's Action. I have friends with Our Revolution, within Our Revolution. We really see, which is Bernie's, you know, the Bernie-related organization, this group here, we're really seeing a lot of people getting into the political system for the first time, and I couldn't be more thrilled about it.
So finally, you are also a radio host. Your show, The Zero Hour. How do you think we need to start framing issues and really effectively using language to call out what Trump is doing and what the Republicans are doing? Because it's so easy for that sector of American society to just say, fake news, fake news, fake news, and move along and keep their blinders up. You have people like George Lakoff who say the Democrats don't use language effectively enough to frame issues. As a host, how do you use language to cast issues, news reports, in a way that you hope might break through that serious barrier we have today, the polarization we're feeling?
I actually ran into George Lakoff right after the convention last year. You were there. And I told him how frustrated I was at all these signs that said love Trump's hate. First of all, because the subliminal mind sees love Trump, people watching TV are being programmed. But also, don't make it about Trump. Don't be something.
Hillary Clinton did, sadly.
Right. My mantra for this is always don't just tell us what you hate, tell us what you love. Don't just tell us who you aren't, tell us who you are. So that's my answer to your question, is stand for something, fight for something, have a cause, have a clear, articulate, focused message. Why can't we have tuition-free higher education? Why should people be saddled with $1.4 trillion of student debt because we didn't believe in our young people enough to support them? Why don't we own our roads and infrastructure? There are a million exciting... Why do we allow drug companies to charge exorbitant patent fees? Why do we protect that when people are dying because of their greed and selfishness, and we invented the drugs in the first place as a people? On and on and on. Why don't we expand Social Security so that you don't have to retire in poverty if you're a working American? Those are the things we should be fighting about. You can speak about those things in ordinary language. People get it. It's not mystical.
How do you respond when the right says liberal elites? To some extent, they might be right, because we have a class of highly educated professionals who back the Democratic Party and Wall Street, who are very happy to avoid talking about the public good and instead want to talk about equating corporate health with the public health. If corporations are strong, everybody is strong. And they've sold this to us, and many of us have bought it.
Well, I think that I do agree. I think there are liberal. I think the Democratic Party has been dominated by liberal elites for 30 years. I think this notion they've been it. People have used to say, you know, in the bitter Bernie Hillary days, well, why do you hate Hillary? I always said I don't hate her. I have strong ideological differences with that then dominant wing of the Democratic Party that believes that privatization is good, that believes that the free market can solve problems in healthcare, which is utter nonsense, as we've now seen. Yeah, we have differences of opinion. So the answer I would give to those Republicans is yes, they're liberal elites, and we're going to take the party from them or do something. You are used car salesmen for the corporate oligarchy, and we're going to put you out of business.
Well, give out information where people can find out more about the work you do and your show, et cetera. Any websites you want to throw out there?
Sure. Okay. Campaign for America's Future is OurOurFuture.org. And the Zero Hour, you can find out more at Patreon. That's patreon.com/TheZeroHour.
We'll post those links to our website later today. RJ, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
I've been speaking with Richard R.J. Eskow, host of The Zero Hour, a weekly radio program, also senior fellow with the Campaign for America's Future. We sat down and had that conversation at the People's Summit in Chicago, Illinois last weekend. We'll be bringing you more interviews from that summit in the coming days. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.